This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and my pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined today by...
Hi, my name is Jeremy Cobb. My pronouns are he, him, but... Okay. Lobin of Roxley, who I think has since changed his name, he's gone through multiple screen names on our Discord, calls me Cobb the Builder.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Into something real big now.
Cobb the Builder! Love it.
Yeah.
Big fan. Yeah. We were talking just in a, I guess for you listening, an upcoming guest episode about the sort of the purely twee nature of being English. And I feel like Bob the Builder very much fits into that category. Like builders.
Is he
in
not
England
Australian?
Bob the Builder? No.
I thought Bob, I never watched Bob the Builder. I just thought that he was Australian.
Definitely English.
Okay, makes sense.
Definitely English. But I think that he fits into that category because if you actually know builders in the UK, they are not Bob the Builder, like typically.
Yeah.
They drive around in these big vans, they're covered in paint all the time, and they are one of two things. They are either extremely polite, lovely guys, or the rudest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. Like, they fall very firmly into one of two camps.
There is no middle ground.
So helpful or ridiculously unhelpful. So I guess Bob the Builder is going more after that first category, but he's way too clean to be an actual British builder because they're always covered in paint. And you'll ask them what they do, and they're like, oh, I like install bathrooms. And I'm like, but how are you covered in paint then?
Like, what do you do? I'm a lumberjack.
Yeah, but you're covered in paint. I don't understand how.
Cutting down them paint trees, man.
Paint grows on trees? Really? Really?
People paint trees.
What? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't get it, man. It's like a dogging thing.
And again, these are all references, which you're going to get in about 2 to 3 weeks' time when that episode comes out. Because
they won't get the dogging thing unless they are like, they look it up, because that is obscure for like an American. Anyone outside of Britain, that's just a really weird,
Well, I think we've now given a little window into when we've recorded this, which is gonna be fun for people to piece together after the fact.
Yes.
And I quite enjoy that. But we actually have an interview for you this episode. What did you talk about with this interview?
We talked about stuff? We talked about a whole bunch of stuff. Talked about how to approach characters if you are yourself not like a professional performer. Because, of course, this person, by the way, the person I interviewed, I did not say it during the interview, is an absolute like workhorse of a TTRPG player.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with like music, then you might have heard the term a session musician. A session musician is a person who is called in by like the producers to come and play a part on a song, even if they're not part of like the regular band. They'll just come in and play the part. And they're called in because they are reliable, they will get it done fast, and they will get it done well. And they will give you exactly what you need. That is this person. If you have them in your show, you're gonna going to get a solid performance. You're going to get somebody who is engaged, who comes in with a knowledge of the mechanics, cool ideas about characters. And so, yeah, we talked about how to make characters, how to approach performance. We talked about video games and Pokemon. We talked about the different kinds of nerds that exist. We talked about a whole range of things.
Amazing.
Yeah. The guest, of course, is Draconic. Drac, friend of the show.
Yeah. That's very exciting. We love Drac. I actually shared a room with Drac. Fun story. I met Drac for the very first time in San Francisco. Despite the fact we live in the same country, we met for the first time in San Francisco, where we shared a room. We bunked together, as it were, at Big Bad Con last year. It was very, very fun. So
he was part of their dogging event.
No, it wasn't. And before Jeremy can make any more references to this, I think that we should turn it over to past Jeremy and his discussion with Draconis.
Hello, halflings. I am here with a real treat for all of you. I'm here with a face, or I guess a voice rather, that you have heard on 3BH multiple times. We have friend of the show, TTRPG writer, performer, and actual play producer. You've heard them in 3BH series like Outlaws and Obelisks, Slow Down Showdown, Paradox Perfect with Brennan Lee Mulligan, also titled Beautiful Nonsense, in which they played Willis, but not future Willis, and most recently, the Vineyard RPG. We got Draconic, everybody!
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just going to keep coming back. You can never get rid of me.
Like a herpes infection that we love.
You know, I grow on you like a barnacle or like an Achilles foot, you know?
Just a relentless fungus that will not stop.
But yeah, hi, I'm Drac, or Draconic, he, they pronouns, and I'm very happy to be here again.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Thank you so much. I want to jump right in. Can you please give us your nerdy origin story? How did you get into nerd stuff in general, and then TTRPG stuff in particular?
Okay, so I guess it depends on what you think, like you classify as nerds.
Try me. Start throwing it out.
I guess
I'll give you my off the cuff opinion.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I've talked to Bri about this before, but I think I've been interested in sports for a very long time, and I think sports, like jocks, are just sport nerds.
Extremely nerdy.
Yeah, they're extremely nerdy, just about sports specifically. So if you want to go with that, I've been a quote-unquote nerd maybe since I was like maybe 12, 13 years old, when I went to secondary school and like actually played competitive sport. In primary school.
Which one? What was your sport of choice?
So I played football for a long time. So it was a lot of football. And then rugby. I started playing rugby in secondary school. I realized that, in all honesty, thinking back on it, I don't think I was really good at most of the sports I tried. I think I was tall and fast for my age. And they used that to the advantage of whatever sport I was in. So I played a lot of football. In my opinion, didn't have much skill for it, but I was fast, and that was useful. I played rugby, again, I didn't have much skill for it, but I was fast, but that was useful. But then I started doing track and field, which I was actually good at because I was fast, and that's the whole point of track and field.
Exactly.
So I think that's when I became like a sports nerd. I loved playing sports. I never really watched much of a fan watching it. Again, it made me feel very restless because I was like, I need to play. Now that I'm watching, I need to play this thing.
Right. Yeah, you want to charge the field and like shove somebody out of the way and be like, I'm in now. Put me in, coach. I feel that way at theater, like at plays sometimes.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll be like, come on, put me in there. Put me in there.
I feel like this thing a lot of, like, a lot of people passionate about something feel. Like, I think it becomes very hard, not to sound like pessimistic or cynical, but I think there reaches a point of passion for a thing where you're like, I'm not satisfied with just watching or seeing it anymore. I want to participate in it. And it's a very interesting thing to acknowledge and then navigate. Sometimes I'm like, Drac, you don't need to be involved in everything. You can just watch. You can just let other people do it and enjoy it as an audience member.
Enjoy the fruits of their labor.
Exactly. But yeah, I think with that version of nerdhood around like maybe 12, 13 years old. If we want to go like the stereotypical like gaming nerd, Like I said, I was interested in sport for a very long time. And I had watched so much media that I was like, oh, I'm not a nerd. I could never be a nerd. Video games are for nerds.
and then you start playing them.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, wait, this is great.
That was literally it. One of my friends introduced me to Pokemon. So I'd heard about Pokemon already.
Oh.
And I was like, that's a nerdy game. I'm a jock. I would never play that. Then one of my friends had Pokemon Pearl, I think, or Diamond.
I was going to say, you must be younger than me because... Yeah. When Pokemon hit, I was there when Pokemon first hit, and everybody, at least in my age range, which I was like 6 or 7 years old, everybody played Pokemon. It was not a nerd or jock thing, to the extent that those distinctions even existed at that age. It was like, it was the cool thing to play.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no.
You started with Diamond and Pearl, Gen 4.
I think so. I think it was Diamond and Pearl. One of my friends had Diamond and Pearl, and I think for whatever reason, I can't remember why, but they just wanted to give it away to a friend. And I was like, yeah, sure, I guess I'll have it. So they gave me Diamond, and I started playing.
Did you have a DS?
Yes, I didn't have one. My younger sister's.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, sure, I guess I'll play it. Why not? And I was hooked. I was up all night. I'd be underneath my covers while my mom thinks I'm asleep, playing, leveling up my Charmander. Like, it was.
Who was your starter? Who was your starter?
I actually can't remember for the life of me because I had Diamond.
It was Chimchar, Piplup, and Turtwig.
Chimchar because I just love, I still do to this day, love fire and just fire types.
Yeah.
So it was Chimchar for sure. And I just stuck with that. Every night during school nights, I'd be just under my covers playing till way too early in the morning. And wouldn't tell anyone because I was like, I'm too embarrassed to tell people that I'm a nerd now. How, me, Drat, a nerd? I could never tell anyone.
I love that. I can't let anyone know that I am engaging in one of the most popular media franchises in the history of humanity. I will never live it down.
I had a very interesting sense of I was a kid, so I guess like I can't say it's interesting. I think many kids have this thing. They're like, can't be
like almost a peculiar sense of what is cool. And it really depends on the school at a lot in like the country and the overall culture that you're in.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I refused to tell them for a long time.
I do want to know, did you ever play Heart Gold and Soul Silver? Because those are Gen 4 as well.
Yes. So after Diamond and Pearl, I got so hooked. So a thing my parents would do to incentivize me to study is that whenever I get good grades, I would get a game. I could like be like, hey, mom, I got great grades. Can I have a game, please? After playing Pokemon Diamond, I got so hooked that I think I bought every single Pokemon game after that until I think the most recent one I have was X and Y, Pokemon X and Y.
Okay. So like right before Sword and Shield, right?
Yeah, right before Sword and Shield.
Or Sun and Moon. Maybe before Sun and Moon? I think it was Sun and Moon, then Sword and Shield, then Scarlet and Violet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I stopped like three or four games now, just purely because I'm just too busy to play now. Not for any disinterest in the games. I just love Pokemon. I think it's really fun. Like, it scratches enough of a strategic itch for it to be satisfying, but not too much of an itch that, like, I can't do it when I'm relaxing. I need to be like fully focused to do it.
Yeah.
So I did play Heart Gold and Soul Silver, and I absolutely loved that the Pokemon followed you around behind you. Like, that was incredible. I was like, they need to make that a thing. And then finally they started making it a thing with the more recent games.
I think it was Scarlet and Violet that they finally brought it back.
Yeah.
For my money, because I started with Red, Blue, and Yellow. I think I started playing after Yellow had come out. So I think Yellow was the first one I had, because I think I had seen the show. But I had Red, Blue, and Yellow pretty much all around the same time. And then went, similar to you, played every single, at least like main series Pokemon game up through Black and White. And I didn't get both Black and White.
Yeah.
I stopped because I just didn't like the Pokemon designs. Like, I had already met Trubbish and was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I met a Vanillite, and then I stopped playing the game.
Yeah.
It
brings a lot of things into question. I think, like, because it's interesting on one hand and just weird on the other, because I think one thing I remember learning while playing Pokemon but I learned just like in biology class was that a lot of creatures look the way they do because it attracts their prey. Mm-hmm. Like there are some plants that smell like just smell like shit because it attracts bugs. Yeah. And those plants eat the bugs or stuff like that. And I remember like applying that to Pokemon and being like, wait a second, what creature would be attracted to vanilla ice cream? A human? Are we the prey of these Pokemon?
But it,
like, it's
but
so
it could
weird.
Be. It could be. But maybe it's camouflage, because it also could be camouflage, or even I can't remember the exact term, but there's a specific biological term for creatures that imitate other organisms in order to try and like repel potential enemies. Like I know sense. What is it? Is it the coral snake? There's a kind of snake that has coloration very similar to another kind of snake that is venomous. There are certain insects that will like, I think there are spiders that try to look like ants. Other bugs are more scared of spiders or of ants than they are of spiders. Yeah. There are some insects I know that try to look like certain kinds of flowers, different like bees and things like that. So it could be that Vanillite is not eating humans. Maybe it's not trying to attract humans to eat them. Maybe it's trying to either hide from other, like maybe humans they know don't, maybe here's another option. Maybe Vanillite wants to be eaten.
Oh
maybe
my
Vanillite
God.
Is like a parasite that can only breed, like, and reproduce in the intestines of a human. Yeah. And like we like poop it out, similar to what's it called? There's a specific parasite that reproduces in cat intestines.
Yes, and it attracts mice.
Exactly. It makes rats and mice not afraid of cats.
Yeah.
And tries to get them eaten. And also possibly humans. It also might make humans like cats.
Yeah.
There's also this possibility that humans like cats.
That'd be very,
because of this.
That'd be terrifying to think that a parasite is affecting human behavior.
I think like a third of humans have it. I think it's something like an insane percentage of humans have gotten it primarily from cats.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, anyway, I'm right there with you in terms of the biology stuff. And I also wanted to quickly point out, I completely agree with you and Debria and your assessment of nerddom. In my opinion, what a nerd is best defined by how you engage with something rather than what you engage with.
Yeah.
I think geek is probably more appropriate to be like, oh, I like video games, or I like fantasy or anything like that. But I think it's how you engage with it. Because
I definitely agree.
If you just play those things, you can have a great time or engage with that media. You can have a great time and love it, but you're not necessarily a nerd about it unless you're sitting there like learning the details of it and like focusing on it and wanting to maybe dress up as it. Because like, look at what is sports if you're wearing like the jersey of a dude?
Yeah.
It's cosplay.
It literally
surely
is.
It's yeah. And you know people who know our like pages of statistics and are like going deep dives. One of my favorite NBA YouTube creators. I don't even watch basketball, by the way. I just like watching the storylines. I don't watch basketball at all. But this dude, every single video of his has at least three charts. And he's looked at statistical data from like all of these players and he puts it together in a really engaging way. But it is so nerdy.
It's
like he's very
clear.
He's such a jock, but it is so nerdy. And people love his videos, too.
Yeah, no, I think, like, when Abria mentioned, said that, like, it opened my eyes. Because I was like, that's absolutely true. There is really no difference, really, between, like, someone who's obsessed with football and someone who's obsessed with Lord of the Rings. When, like, they both can, like, name, the, like, obscure facts about characters or in the team's sense, players. Like, there's definitely a weird... I definitely agree with you as well with the geek being a better descriptor for, like, the stereotypical, like, fantasy adorer, like, video gamer who's obsessed with those things. But yeah, nerd is very widespread and I think should be embraced by more people, honestly.
Absolutely. I would like, before we move on, could you please give us one nerdy sports fact?
Sports fact. God, okay, so it's not a sports fact, but it's a reacting to a fact that I think emphasizes how much of a nerd I am for this. So in secondary school, one of the classes I took was history, and one of the modules was sports history. Specifically, I think UK sports history. And we talked about rugby. And there was this clip that I can't remember for the life of me. I think it was England versus, I think, New Zealand. And one of the players did this absolutely insane run, like from one end of the pitch to the other, just dodging, weaving past people. Mm-hmm. And they played the clip in the classroom. And I, well and truly, I didn't understand why it was happening at that moment. And I didn't understand why, I still don't understand why it happened to me. But I watched it and I started tearing up because I was like, oh, this is beautiful. Like, I,
yes,
this is like an incredible piece of like an incredible play in a rugby match I've ever seen in my life. And I looked mm-hmm. down at my hands, like, I'm crying. I was truly confused. My friend next to me was like, are you crying? I'm like, I think I am. I don't understand. Like, it's not a fact, but like, it's a reaction to a fact that I was, that was when I really clicked with me, like, damn, I'm a bit too into
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
I'm way into this.
Oh, wow. No, I can totally relate to that. There have definitely been pieces of media where something will happen and it's not even supposed to be sad or anything
yeah.
or even make you have that emotional response. But I will think in the moment, like it will not even think, but it will hit me that like this, whatever it is, hits me in such a way that it feels so perfect yeah. that it brings me to tears. Like, I remember, did you ever watch the show Community?
No, I actually didn't.
Oh, I highly recommend it. It's very, very good. It's, yeah, if you, did you enjoy, have you ever seen Rick and Morty?
Yes, yeah, yeah. I was a Rick and Morty fan. It's pretty funny. There's some humor, I'm like, but there is some pretty funny jokes and storylines, yeah.
Yeah, so Rick and Morty is made by the same guy who created Community.
Oh, damn.
And actually recycles a lot of jokes and bits, entire episode formats from Community.
I didn't know that, okay.
Yeah, Community is like Rick and Morty, but less depressing and less sci-fi. It's like a bunch of people yeah. at a community college, but trying to be just weird people.
Yeah.
But there's a scene in which one of the most famous episodes of the show, the episode that really put the show on the map, is an episode in which the entire campus has a campus-wide paintball assassin is what they call it. And it starts as like, okay, it's whatever. And then it turns into like a post-apocalyptic, like, action movie pastiche with references to stuff like Terminator, Die Hard. But near the episode, one of the characters, I won't say exactly what happens, but it's literally a shot of a character walking into a room while in slow motion while music plays. And I started crying because it was like something about the intersection of the way that the characters had been built up to that moment, the yeah. way that the plot had built up to that moment, and the way that the movie references had all come together to converge on that one moment. It was yeah. like, this is one of the most perfect moments in a piece of media that I've ever seen. And from there, like, it became my favorite thing. I was obsessed with Community. I highly recommend
right
it.
After this, actually.
Yeah, check it out. I will say, it takes, for a lot of people, it takes a couple of episodes to really get going, yeah. but just check out, if you finish season one and are just like, I don't like this, then don't watch anymore. But yeah. I would say, try and get to at least the paintball episode, which is towards the end of season one.
Okay.
It's called Modern Warfare. Yeah, ooh. Highly recommend it. But we've talked enough about the introduction to geekdom and nerdery. How did you go from that to, like, from Pokemon to TTRPGs, and not just from enjoying TTRPGs, but playing TTRPGs professionally?
Yeah. So it kind of came in twofolds with, my TTRPG origin. That's how I always say it anyway. It came in twofolds because the first was just finding out that actual plays specifically existed. I'd heard of D&D. Everyone, like, it's hard not to hear D&D, even if you're outside of the bubble. But again, very similar to Pokemon, it was like, oh, that's like extreme nerddom. Like, I'm, at this point, I've accepted I'm a nerd, but I'm not that yeah. much of a nerd. So I didn't really look yeah. into it, didn't really try to find it. Or
you were right, though, this time. D&D is way, especially like 5 or 6 years ago, was way further down
yeah.
the nerd rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But then I was watching... I guess it's another version of like nerddom I am. I love video games. I've always loved video games mm-hmm. for like, especially after Pokemon, I really got into all kinds of video games. And I also love watching video games. And
oh,
one
yes.
day, God, now I'm saying, I think like 3 years ago at the beginning of the pandemic, like maybe 4 years, I don't know how long it's been. But a while ago, I was in university and I was watching Markiplier playing a video game on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'd reached a point where it was very sudden shit where I couldn't sleep without like some kind of background noise. So I'd usually have like Markiplier or some other video game on YouTube playing on my phone and I would fall asleep. So I fell asleep and then woke up and apparently YouTube autoplay had been on. So I'd finished the Markiplier video, probably a few other videos, and it ended up in a Geek and Sundry video. And it was in the middle of like episode, I don't know, probably like 7 or 8. So I didn't know what was going on, but like 7 or 8 of Ivan Van Norman's Foreververse.
Whoa.
And, the general gist of it, because I ended up rewatching it after I got hooked, but the general gist of it is that these group of people kind of jump from universe to universe. And in each universe, they play a different system and have a different problem to solve. And I saw this, I was like, this is cool. This is interesting. This is like friends playing around at a table, playing just improv, playing pretend with some rules. That's interesting. Yeah. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, and I was like, this is cool. This is fun. It's like a bunch of friends around a table playing improv with enough rules to make it not the whole my shield blocks all attacks kind of thing. Like, there's enough rules for it to be fun.
You missed. I have infinity HP.
Yeah, exactly. There's enough rules to stop that from happening, but enough like flexibility to still do whatever you want. So I started watching actual plays after that. I watched a bunch of Geek and Sundry shows. So like Foreververse was one. I got really into Callisto 6, which is another campaign that's on Geek and Sundry. And that really scratched my itch. It was a superhero, like sci-fi superhero campaign. And I'd watched, like, I got really into a bunch of other actual plays. Kolok 1991 was a big one as well.
Man, and these are some deep cuts. I've never heard of most of these.
Oh, they're really good. Callisto 6, highly recommend. I think
say the name again.
Callisto 6. It's Callisto 6. And then number 6.
Okay.
It's really good. It uses the cyber system system. And there's a bunch of like this incredible talent in Geek and Sundry playing superheroes, sci-fi superheroes. Kolok 1991 is on Hyper RPG. It's really good. Abria was a star on it. They were the main character. I think they guested for one episode, and afterwards they're like, hey, stick around, we love you, and then came on for the second and third season as a permanent cast member. But that was really good. But I got into watching them that way, and I think mentally in my head I was like, I'm just fine with watching it, that's fine, this is not for me, but I can, it's fun to watch. But then as I brought Kolok 1991, I saw Bria playing, and it kind of clicked in my brain, like, oh, I do actually want to play this. I really want to play this. And then watching a Bria like absolutely dominate like the table, like absolutely kill it at the table, I was like, I can do this, I could do that. So I joined my university's D&D club and started playing D&D there. And then
I want to ask really quickly, what was it about the fact that Abria was crushing it that made you be like, oh, I can do this? Was it just the fact that you were like watching her just completely own everything? Or was it like, did you identify, like, was there, for example, the idea of the fact that it's a black person jumping in and just crushing it at this?
I think it was a mixture of both, because in Callisto 6, there is a black character, Aliza is in it, and they played an incredible character. But I think...
Oh, like Aliza Pearl?
Aliza Pearl, yeah. Aliza Pearl is
Pearl's great.
Yeah, like Aliza Pearl is incredible. Honestly, I'm a huge fan of them. I got to play them a bunch of times after that. But watching Aliza Pearl, I love their character. But I think Abria's was like... Aliza Pearl is just very sweet. And I think the character is very sweet, but Abria is also very sweet, but the character was like in your face. I think it was like the character was unapologetically in your face about things and their belief. And I think it was more of like seeing a black person play a character that wouldn't feel submissive was what clicked with me. Or like someone who like put their foot
protagonist energy.
Protagonist main character energy. Again, not to say that Lisa didn't play that kind of character, but their character was like also just a kind of character. But seeing a black person be allowed to play such an aggressive character was what, when it clicked to me, being like, I would love to do this as well. So yeah, joined my D&D club, and then the pandemic hit. like a month later. So I immediately was like, okay, guess I'm going to just play online now. It immediately was like, that's it. That was what I needed. I needed that push. I can't play my friends in person anymore. Everyone's PC set was too bad to play online. Like people were dropping out of call. The mic quality was terrible. Like it made it impossible to actually play. So I was like, I'm going to join a TRPG community online and play with them. And I'd already like streamed a little bit, video games on Twitch, purely because I had like, I still do, but a much less extent. I had social anxiety and I had like huge stage fright, which was like, usually we'd be fine, but I had like performing sisters. Like my sisters were already either public speaking or performing. So I really wanted to like force myself to get better at it. And I thought the easiest and most comfortable way to do that would be streaming. So I was like,
that's like a sports player's mentality in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like so the Michael Jordan, like, oh, they say he can't defend. So he just works playing, like he works defense constantly until that suddenly he's amazing at it. Yeah, that's absolutely. It's like a sports player's mentality, bringing it to like a performance context.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. I think that quite literally is it. Yeah, because I did very much the same thing with football and rugby and all of that. But yeah, so I just dived in head first. And I think the first to ease myself into it, because I was still very nervous, like even with the conviction of like, I need to do this, it was still terrifying knowing that I'd be playing make-believe in front of people watching. Mm-hmm. So I played a nervous character to like get away with being nervous in person and played, it was called Medical Bay 3. It was a sci-fi medical drama TTRPG. We played aliens or interstellar humans in a space ward, helping people and aliens with their illnesses.
Well, did you set this up, or was it? Did you like audition? How did you end up in it?
So I think people might know this, but on Twitch and just other communities in general, streaming communities, there are many channels that are like, "Hey, if you want to play, just let us know, and we can like put you in a game." And I found Other Doc. That's literally the word other than docs, DOC. On Twitch, and I was like, hey, I'd love to play in a game. And they're like, yeah, sure, this is great for first timers. I think they specialize in like helping first timers get into TTRPGs and streaming them as well. So I played on their channel, and then in that game I met a good friend of mine, Jen, and apparently my nervous alien doctor was enough fun to play with that they were like, hey, let's play again together, and invited me to a channel they ran. And I started like appearing on their channels more and more often.
And it all kind of went from there?
Yeah, it went from there. After a while, it became clear that that channel wasn't great. There were some very problematic views. So Jen and I and a few others decided to leave and just make our own channel.
Made our own.
Within like probably like 3 months after starting, I was running a whole new channel, French Roll Dice, with these people. And it kind of just blossomed from there. I became hooked on TTRPGs after that.
Wow. And you pretty much never looked back, because I know every time that we've worked together, it has been like, look, I got a heart out at this time. I got to go do a stream. it never stops.
It's been a lot of fun, because I think It's scratched an itch I didn't know I had of performing. And I'm realizing the thing why I was so terrified of, like, in general beforehand, had stage fright, was that in most positions where I was asked to act, I didn't have anything really to go off of. I didn't have, like, a script or even really, like, a character description to go off of. But now with TTRPGs, I'm either creating my character, or if I'm guessing, I'm often given a character, so I can, like, understand it before going into it. And that's, I think, helped a huge amount. Honestly helped a lot with my social anxiety. I'm a lot better at public speaking now and just being around people now. So it's been great. It's been a life-changing experience, honestly.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there, and you know what? You can update it with an app, so every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yeah, that honestly leads me to a question that I wanted to ask. As somebody, most of the people that we have engaged with and that are in, that I've observed, the TTRPG space, especially the ones who perform regularly, usually have some kind of performance background. Either they are professional actors, or they trained at some point, or they just did a bunch of it like in high school or college or whatever. But in your particular case, I'm curious, because the vast majority of people who play TTRPGs ultimately are not people with performance backgrounds. Yeah. How is it, how do you approach playing TTRPG characters from a role play standpoint as somebody who hasn't performed before?
Yeah. So just to let everyone know how polar opposite I am from like the theater background, I am fully STEM. Like maths, physics, science, chemistry. Like in A levels, I did maths, further maths, and physics. That's my background. So like I'm so far from theater. I think the only person that really is like heavy in that is the oldest of my youngest sisters. Mm-hmm. So I, as someone who doesn't have any theater background, I still find a lot of theater tricks help. A lot of my friends, like you mentioned, a lot of people we interact with, at least when it comes to like streaming, mm-hmm. Tend to have theater backgrounds, and a lot of them have things like they have playlists to listen to that helps them get into the mood. Or one of my good friends has like they ask their character questions, where they have like 20 Ooh. Questions and they go through those questions answering it as if they were their character to like really mm-hmm. get into the mindset of them. And I borrow bits and pieces of that depending mm-hmm. on the role, I guess. It feels weird mm-hmm. to say that for TTRPG, but it essentially is. I'm a performer. The role I step into. So like for like long campaigns, I definitely do the question route. I have, I originally had 20 questions, but recently, semi-recently, Ginny D put out 100 questions that they ask. Yeah. So like I go through those questions one by one for like long-term characters.
100 questions.
Yeah.
My word. Can you don't say all the questions, please. But can you give like a couple examples? And I'm gonna have to look this up.
Yeah. It's like mundane as like, is your character night owl or early bird? Some of those questions like that. Or what is your, like simple, like what is your character's hobby? Mm-hmm. Right down to the like very deep and harsh, like, what's an event that changed your character forever? Like it goes from the minuscule to the macro, like everything it covers really well. And a lot of the time it makes you ask other questions about like, oh, that's interesting, I said that, but why would that be a thing? Let's mm-hmm. like dig deeper into that character. I also make playlists, which is lot of fun. A lot of the time, like you mentioned, I'm often going from project to project, being like, I have a hard out, so I need to go now. Yeah. So I don't always have the time to like re-look over the answers to the questions I have or anything like that, or do any massive rituals. Sometimes I just mm-hmm. listen to music that helps me think about the like personality type or the things they've been through in their backstory or in the campaign itself. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times I'm not as gifted as some of my friends who are able to like read deep into the lyrics and be like, okay, these lyrics feel right for this character. I'm just like, mm-hmm. this song feels like a thing my character would listen to, so I'm gonna listen to
it. I think that works just as well. Like, it doesn't have to be the lyrics have distinct relevance. I know one time I recorded a thing, actually, it hasn't been released yet, but the thing that I showed you the art for that we will that remain nameless, that has an appearance by C from Transplanar.
Yeah.
And
oh, C so much.
Yeah, C's the bomb. and they had a musical piece that I'm pretty sure was all instrumental that they had picked out as like, this is the vibe I'm going for. Yeah. And I was like, yo, this is sick. And I know in like past games, I sort of learned to DM from watching Dimension 20, specifically like Fantasy High, the first season. I started DMing not too long after that had ended. And I went in being like, oh, well, in the first episode, every character has music that is associated with their character up front. And some of them, those themes return throughout the series. Okay, well, then I will go to my players and have them each pick a theme song for their character that could be something the character listens to, something lyrically that like describes them, or it could just be something that has the vibe. Like a couple of people have picked instrumentals. Like, it's been all over the place. One dude picked War Pigs. I suggested War Pigs because he was playing this Minotaur barbarian who wanted to like conquer everything. And I'm like, this is it. Like from the moment when we hit like the second, the boom, 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 it's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm right there with you. Like that can, I don't always do it for my TTRPG characters, but I think that can be an extremely effective way because music communicates on such an emotional level for so many people. I think it can really get you in the right mindset.
Like immediately, yeah.
Out of curiosity, did you have, because obviously with Willis, there was not any time to ask any of these questions, except for the questions that were already in the game. But with Carfi, for example, because we had a whole call about Carfi. For those of you who don't know, when Drac was in Outlaws and Obelisks Slowdown Showdown, that was the version that was released on Three Black Halflings is a two-part sequel to a D&D celebration game, a live-streamed D&D celebration game that we did. And I met with each of the players ahead of time and basically went through their characters with them, threw out ideas, helped develop stuff. And so we had like a full, I don't even know how long of a call, but it was like an hour or something.
Yeah, I think it was maybe a bit more than an hour, yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. So I'm curious, did you have any of this in place for Carfi? Did Carfi have a theme song or anything like that?
I didn't get to go through the questions because I think at the time I was just doing so much. But I did make a playlist. I did make a playlist of like three or four songs that I felt like really fit the vibe of one, the campaign. I felt like that would help me a lot as well. But two of the game. But two of his mindsets that I felt like resonated with his mindset, just to play like before and sometimes even during recording. So I could just get in, like, re-sense to myself. Because a lot of the time, like, that game was incredible and it was a lot of fun. There were so many funny things that definitely, like, pulled me out of my character because me and Drac were just laughing too hard. So, like, I don't know if anyone could see it in the video, but there'll be moments where you see me clicking. That's me, like, playing the playlist again to be like, okay, Drac, get back into the headspace. Get back in there.
Ignore the dude who has a literal stick up his ass. Go back. Go back to the character. Come on. Bring it back in.
It was a lot of fun. I absolutely loved it. I don't think I've laughed that hard in a while. But yeah, and no, I definitely had a playlist, like a short playlist. I usually have like, again, like for longer campaigns, my playlist can be like anywhere between 5 to 20 songs. But for Carfi, it was short 5 songs.
Yeah.
That I'll just have.
Do you remember any of them?
No, actually, let me see if I can look.
Yeah, if you still have the playlist, like if it's on Spotify, can you give me, because I'd love to share it as part of the episode. I think it would give a lot of insight into how people could approach their own characters. And also, for anybody who listened to that and really loved Carfi, who's a great character, I think it would be cool to get to hear that as well, to hear like your inspirations. While you're looking for that.
I don't actually think I have it.
Oh, that's a shame.
I was using a friend's account at the time, I think. Yeah. So I don't have it on
Do you remember any songs that were on it?
No, but there was a lot of soul music. Like two or three bits of soul music, purely because I think we joked about this, but my character is basically like a black man trapped in, like magical armor. So I was like, let me just make sure I don't forget that bit.
I love that. We never even got to get into that part of the backstory.
Yeah, we actually didn't. Yeah, I guess anyone listening now, you just learned about it. Yeah, Warforge was actually just a black man trapped and like in magical armor and forgot that they were human. That they just truly thought they were like created Warforge.
Yeah. And you had, it was like you had been, I think it was, you were possibly part of the military.
Yeah.
And you were part of like some strike team that had like high tech magic suits. And then when the calamity happened, you were probably the only person who survived in your unit, but basically you got fused into the armor and it completely washed your brain. Yeah. So you just are like, whoa, I guess this is me.
I guess I'm a Warforge. Cool, I guess.
Yeah. And you can like engage with machines. Cause that's another thing. We never got to do it, but you come from a place called Construct City, where there's like all these living machines and stuff, which almost, I wanted to mention this, in one of my D&D in a Castle games, shout out to this round four of 2022, we did an Utarum game, and almost went to Construct City. I thought they were going to.
Nearly.
Yeah. Oh, I would have had Carfi show up too in the game. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, they ended up deciding to go someplace else, but oh, it was so cool. I was so excited. but yeah, Carfi's awesome. I think that's a great approach. And further to that, I wanted to ask, well, there's two questions. Number one, obviously when you have played a number, like a range of different TTRPGs, I'm curious for you as a performer, are there any specific TTRPGs that you find are easier to engage with a character because of the way that the mechanics and the character elements maybe interact or don't interact? Yeah. And then I guess the second part of this question is for systems like D&D, where people have sometimes complained, or at least I've heard people complain, and I have complained that sometimes people will tend to approach the mechanics and the character as like separate. How do you, as a player, reconcile the mechanics of various systems to the character that you are trying to create? Like, what's the relation? Does the character spring from the mechanics? Does it inform the mechanics? Are they just two separate things? How do you engage with all of that?
Yeah. So I'll answer the first question. The system I find would be easier to, like, onboard and connect the mechanics with the character. I'd say, honestly, maybe the Cypher system I'm pretty biased towards, just because I just love the Cypher system.
Mm-hmm. That's what they use for Callisto 6, you said?
Yeah. Mm. The Monticut Games, the publisher, they made games like Invisible Sun, Cyber System for... And the Cyber System is like setting agnostic, so they have a bunch of books for different settings you'd want or different genres, but the Cyber System itself is really good for just any of them. Cyber System is really good. Hard by the Apocalypse is always loved and simple, and it's really... I think where it thrives is that there's enough like vagueness to what each mechanic can be that you can just play any character and just have the stats not really need to be linked directly or dictate how they act. I'd probably say Pirate by the Apocalypse and the Cypher system really good. Quest is really good if you want to like really lean into like something similar to D&D with like the fantasy and the D20 and all of that, but still a bit more rules light. I'd say those three. Quests, Cyber System, and Powered by the Apocalypse.
I've played Powered by the Apocalypse. I haven't played the other two, although I think I did a little bit of research on Quest. And I can certainly say Powered by the Apocalypse does a great job of because most of the character creation and the abilities are tied back in some way to who you are as a person.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, they're explicitly in the rules, at least in the ones that I've played.
Yeah.
They are, like, extensions of who you are as a person rather than sort of a job that you have or just a set of abilities that you have.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
For D&D, though, that's interesting because I think I take it from a very different, like, route than many people do. Mm-hmm. I actually do let the mechanics dictate the character, but sort of. So a lot of the time, I'm a min-maxer, but I am a strong believer that min-maxing doesn't take away from roleplay. Mm-hmm. I think people mix up min-maxing and like power gaming or like I think there's another word for it that I think I haven't heard in a long time, and I think it was originated before my time in D&D space. Mm-hmm. But I min-max, and a lot of the time I have like an idea for like a really good multi-class or good or just straight up class of feats that I think mm-hmm. would work together well, and then I build it, and then I sit there and think, okay, now that I've built this, who in their right mind would train to become this and then branch out from that.
That's cool.
So like I'd like think of like what kind of personality would want to be this, rather than think of a personality mm-hmm. and then build a character around it,
right?
Because a lot of the time I never want my characters to be a fighter who's good at hitting with swords. I want my character to be a father who learned how to fight because his daughter was failed in a war. It's something like mm-hmm. I have this thing and I want to make a play a personal that. Reason. Yeah. A personal reason why they would become this.
Well, that's like Carfi. When we were building Carfi, I think we started with Warforged. We started with Armorer and Warforged, and you really like Armorer, Artificer, and Warforged. And you were like, that's what I want to play. And it's like, cool, let's build something out of that. And I think we ended up with, if we wanted to tie you in with the Calamity itself, that was what we settled on. And I think it worked perfectly. Like, we didn't have to bring it up in the game, but like, I think it made Carfi feel like a more interesting character.
Yeah, no, then you literally, you got to, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, you fully witnessed my method of like build and then character. Because I'm also one of those people who I have a D&D Beyond account. I've got the subscription. I have so many character builds there. I have like maybe over 100, maybe nearing 200 at this point used. I just build. I'm like, this is a fun build. Let me create this and then never use it. So yeah, I have that. But, It's I think it's a really fun way to build a character, because I think for me, and I think everyone's fun is different, but for me, I really don't like playing a character who's not good at what I wanted them to be good at.
Right.
Like
I'm so there with you.
Yeah. Like
I've had this. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, you go ahead.
You know, I was gonna say I think it's because a lot of people say like min-maxers never lean into their mins, and I'm like, that's not a min-maxer then. Like, if you're not if you're not rolling with the low rolls, then you're not really playing the game, and I definitely don't do that. But there's definitely a point where I'm like, yeah, I'm playing a father who became a fighter to avenge their daughter, but I also want them to be good at avenging their daughter, you know? Like, I feel like it, like, so that when they do fail, or if they do fail, it hits it that much harder as well, because like they've been doing it, they've never met failure. If they do, it's very rarely, but then when they eventually do, it hurts and affects them much more deeply than it would if it's just like, oh, it's another thing, it always happens. Like, so that's like how I min-max and play a min-max character and build my characters.
Honestly, I think that makes perfect sense. You create a character that fits what you want them to be able to do, and you have a synergy between the mechanics and the character. Yeah. Even though you start maybe from a different spot, what you end up with is there's a unification that like it feels like a whole person. I've told this story on the show multiple times, but one of my friends in a game that I ran, a home game, wanted to play a character who was a detective. He really wanted to make a character who was like this cool, suave detective guy. Who comes from like a family of investigators, and he chose to play him as a gunslinger fighter who had very low like his wisdom was a +0. I think his charisma was good, and I think his intelligence was good, but he basically wasn't good at detecting.
Yeah.
Because most of his skills, he didn't have very many proficiencies, number one, because he's a fighter. And then number two, he couldn't do insight or perception very well. Like, he was good at investigation, but I don't even know if he was, I think he was proficient with that. But, like, he had such a mishmash, and it would undermine him. Like, he would literally try to play the character the way he wanted him to be, and it would just, it made the character look like a doof. Because, like, he would miss everything.
Yeah.
And it got to where I'm like, dude, you know, the people in the organization are not going to be fans of your guy, because he's out here just screwing it up. He keeps getting himself killed. Like, what you wanted him to be was like a super detective, and instead he's actually the muscle that the super detective should be calling in to deal with stuff once the super detective has figured it out. And so we eventually had to go back and respec his character to be a rogue multi-class with Gunslinger really Fighter.
Because
it fits. And I kept trying to tell him, like, dude, as much as I think your character is a great idea, the mechanics, unfortunately, are not serving what you have tried to make. You've not made a character mechanically that serves what you are trying to do roleplay-wise. And whereas with a character like Carfi or a number of the other, or the hypothetical father who's offending the daughter, there's a unification. The mechanics serve the roleplay just like the roleplay serves the mechanics. Like they go back and forth. The mechanics become part of the roleplay. So yeah, I completely support that. I think that's a fantastic way of approaching it. I really quickly wanted to touch on your work as a writer and a producer and how you got into that, and what are some of, if you have any tips or advice for people who are trying to get into those fields, at least when it comes to TTRPGs. I imagine that some of the skills would still be transferable to other areas as well. Yeah. Could you give us a quick rundown and a piece of advice, please?
Yeah. Well, I'd say so. As I got into writing, honestly, truly, a friend of mine I asked a friend of mine, like, how did you get into writing? Quite literally, like, how did you do it? And they just said that they wrote a bunch of stuff for themselves, because a lot of the time people looking for writers want some kind of portfolio. And if you wait to build a portfolio out with, like, officially published or things that you've been hired to do, you won't get a very big portfolio very quickly. So they advise that I just write stuff for myself, even if it's like just small one sheet, one page TTRPGs or one page adventures. And so I did a lot of that. If you follow me on Twitter, you'd see me tweeting, like, it'd be really cool if there's just an adventure like this. I'll just randomly tweet an idea. And often a lot of the time, that's quickly followed by me just writing it up myself. In like my notepad on my phone or quickly on like Google Docs, and then adding it to my portfolio. Another thing that helped a lot was just kind of reaching out to some publishers and just asking. A lot of, especially some of the smaller ones, are looking for freelance writers to write adventures or entire systems for them. Like Modifius is one that they always have their like email and doors open for people who want to apply to be a writer. I believe Cubicle 7 is like, you have to look out for when they actually open up the application process, but they do occasionally have application processes. They're the folks who made the Doctor Who role-playing game. They recently made Doctors and Daleks, which is a D&D 5e version of that system. Are they involved? I don't think they're involved in Warhammer. It's Soulbound, I believe it's called. It's another system. You should check it out. Cubicle 7 does really good systems, really good games. But Cubicle 7 is one that they occasionally have things open for. And just look around in your like indie TTRPG space, because a lot of my writing credit is like indie TTRPG writers being like, we have a Kickstarter, we want to have someone on a stretch goal, or just need more writers on. Like Banana Chan, I wrote for Banana Chan's Damus Academy. I wrote a scenario for that. I believe they brought me on for another game, like very soon after that, called Exquisite Corpse Party, I believe it's called. And that was a lot of fun to write for. So just reaching out to indies first, I think, is a good way, because we're always trying to uplift each other. We're always trying to get more experience and more viewpoints on their writing and our writing. And then from there, expanding out to maybe the bigger names like Wizards of the Coast or Paizo, stuff like that.
Yeah, once you have a portfolio of work you can point to. Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. So you have like evidence that you've got good work. One, you've got good work ethic, and two, you just enjoy and good at writing. So I'd say that's probably my advice for that. And also just make sure you're writing things that you actually enjoy doing. I went through a process specifically for performing. I learned from performing not to do this for writing, but just accepting everything and anything. Don't do that because if you're passionate about it, it will not be fun and it will make you lose passion for it. Be picky. Even if you're starting out, I think the biggest thing, actually that's my biggest tip, be picky regardless of if you're a beginner or a newbie, because a lot of people will try and prey on the fact that you're new and seemingly desperate. Don't. Just if something's interesting, do it. If something doesn't interest you, don't. I recently got reached out to by incredible folks, but they reached out to me to do a Fallout adventure for the Fallout TTRPG. It was Modiphius, I believe, and I was like, I have no interest in Fallout. Like, thank you so much for reaching out to me, but I and the pay was good. I was like, I generally just don't have any interest in it. I would not enjoy writing this. And they appreciated it. They were like, thank you. Like, most people just take it without showing any passion for it. They were like, thank you for letting us know that you like your genuine, honest opinion, because it shows in your writing as well. Like, if you don't know the lore, if you don't care about the lore, if you don't care about your writing, it shows in it.
And Fallout is a franchise with very dedicated fans. And like, I recently have been playing Fallout New Vegas. It's the only Fallout game I've ever played. And I think it's a great game. Yeah. But, like, there is such... That game came out in 2009, 2010. And there are still videos getting hundreds of thousands of views being made about that game, ranking the different weapons. And it's like, this game is 13 years old. Like, how on earth? So, that is not a franchise you want to just be like, just like walk in there and just start throwing a bunch of stuff on the page. You don't care.
Like, an example of one I was passionate about is Cubicle 7 reached out to me, and they've actually announced it recently. They reached out to me for me to write an adventure for the Doctor Who role playing game. I love Doctor Who. I've loved Doctor Who for a very, very long time. And they reached out to me to write for their 60th anniversary celebration book. So I got to write one of the adventures in that. So if you check out Keyboard 7, volume 2 of the... Because there's two volumes. Volume 1 is like Old Who. So I think first up to the 8th Doctor. And then the second volume is New Who. So it's 9th up to Eccleston the and so on. 14th. Yeah, from Eccleston up to, I think, David Tennant 2. Spoiler alert. But David Tennant returns as the Doctor in the most recent episode. So it's up to the second appearance of David Tennant as the Doctor. And I've written quite a few things, but I believe I wrote Matt Smith's adventure. So I wrote for the Matt Smith era.
That's cool.
I'm in that book, so if you want to check that out.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's amazing. By the way, as a side note, how excited are you for... I don't really follow Doctor Who that closely, but I don't know if he's already debuted, but how excited are you for the first Black Doctor?
I was so unbelievably excited because so technically they aren't the first Black Doctor because in the...
The one woman, right?
Yeah, there's a woman, like, but she's like Dr. Adjacent, like it was really weird how they did it. I won't spoil it for anyone who does want to watch or is interested in it, but the first like actually whole season of a Black Doctor is Shooty, and I'm very excited for it. I'm very excited to have them. I think they're an incredible like actor. I watched them in Sex Education, and they're by far, they weren't even like the main character, they're the best friend of the main character. And in my opinion, the black best friend. Yeah. But they were incredible. They stole the show. So like hearing that they will be the next Doctor, I'm so unbelievably excited. And it takes everything in my soul and will to not make every post I put on any social media to be about that specifically. So I'm like, okay, this is my special interest. I can't make everyone have to suffer through this, so I'm not going to, but gods, I want to.
Have you already planned the cosplay?
So that's very funny because a friend of mine saw the announcement of Shooty being the new Doctor and like scrolled through it quickly, so they didn't see the picture properly, and apparently they thought it was me, so immediately messaged me being like, after obviously checking and being like, oh, it's not actually Drac, they immediately messaged me like, you need to cosplay him. And I'm like,
yes.
Yeah, I guess I will.
There's a resemblance. There's a genuine resemblance there. Like, I'm sitting here thinking it like, yeah, I can see it. I think it'd be a really, really good cosplay.
I would absolutely do it. It would be my second cosplay ever. And I would happily do it.
Oh, I hope that happens. I really hope that I cannot. And in fact, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to claim that it's going to happen at some point.
Oh,
and
damn, so I have to make it happen now. Yeah.
Yeah. When it happens. Exactly. When it happens, I cannot wait to see the photos. That's so cool. Well, Drac, as we're wrapping things up, for every episode, every single guest, we always have to ask, can you please give us a tale from the table? This can be a story from one of your experiences playing any TTRPG that a particularly memorable moment, whether it's funny, whether it's sad, whether it's horrifying, whether it's shocking, whether it's amazing, whether it brought a tear to your eye, anything, a tale from the table, please spin it for us.
A while ago, I was on a Cyber System campaign, or a sci-fi Cyber System campaign called Infinite Horizon. It was a ton of fun. I think we went on for like 2 years. And I think one memorable experience, I'll call it, because it spanned a couple of episodes, a couple of sessions, but was I originally was on that show as a guest. I played a character called Theon. And I got to play the very cool, stereotypical, and now that you know I'm a Doctor Who fan, probably very understandable character of, oh, I came from the future to warn the main cast about something wrong that was going to happen. So I played a character with time travel powers, and I went back to the past to warn the main cast of something. And during the episode, a lot of stuff happened, and we ended up in a fight with one of my character's nemesis that had also gone to the past to like mess
future
it up.
Future Willis.
future Willis. you see, I love time travel, as you can tell. But we're in a fight, like in a ship, and the arch nemesis was like saw that they were like on their last legs and was so desperate to like take us out that they basically busted the wall and everyone got sucked out into just the vastness of space with no suits.
Oh no!
And we were just like kind of floating there. We had to make some rolls and checks to see if we can get back to the ship, and we didn't. And
by one,
everyone died. And then my character was left. And my character, I was like, I had, so I asked the GM, I was like, I want to try something absolutely ridiculous. I want to go back in time and make this never happen. Like, go back in time enough to warn everyone from this happening. So we rolled for it and it happened. So we went back in time, prevented it from happening. And that was the end of my guest appearance. I was like, cool, that's my guest appearance. That was really cool, done. Later on, they were like, we loved your character. Do you want to come on as a permanent cast member? So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. I'll come as a cast member. And brought back that
it's
character.
Like Future Trunks.
Yeah, yeah. So I brought back that character, came up with a reason why I was back with these group in this time. And then many episodes later, we learned that I technically didn't undo that. That I actually just made a branching timeline.
Oh,
so that timeline still had like the dead main cast, and only one of the main cast survived in that realm. And they became so angry and twisted that they became the big bad of our campaign.
Whoa!
So my guest appearance created the big bad of that campaign. And
so
I think
sick.
Learning that was like, oh, that rocked me. Because I think it rocked me as a player and me as a character. My character was like, because this bad guy destroyed worlds. Like, they went on to like destroy worlds. So like my character had that on their conscience as well. But then me as a player was like, oh, there really are consequences to my actions, even my guest actions.
And the irony of that. Like, the idea that your character came back to try and prevent disaster, and in the process of preventing that disaster, you caused greater disaster, like even worse. That's really wild. That's cool.
It was ridiculous. It was a ton of fun as well. Like, the system itself, the cyber system, was like close and dear to my heart. Because obviously, even though Foreververse was incredible, I love Foreververse. Callisto 6 was the first actual play that like I got into. Like, I was there every week watching it live. I was in chat communicating with the community and everything like that. So like, the cyber system itself kind of like was linked to the experience. So getting to play it and then have such a like truly shattering, like heart-wrenching experience in my own campaign was a lot of fun. So I'd say I think that would be my tale of like incredible emotion and storytelling.
That is a phenomenal tale from the table. I am also a sucker for time travel, so right up my alley. Thank you so much, Drac, for being here. Please, can you tell the folks where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on all over social medias, whatever one is still alive, at Draconics, that's Draconiques. I'm most predominantly on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, but I'm also on Blue Sky, Hive, God, what else? Threads, all under that.
Did you get on Mastodon?
I think I'm on Mastodon, but I haven't used it since the first like craze. Instagram as well, if you want to follow me there, but I don't really use Instagram. TikTok as well, if you want to follow me there, but again, don't really use TikTok. But who knows, that might change, because I've got a few projects in the works that might require TikToks and Instagram posts to really get it out there. But yeah, you can check me out in those places.
All right. Well, Drac, thank you so much for being here. This is a blast. It's been a long time coming. You've been a friend of the show for years now, so I'm so glad we finally got to do it. And I hope we get to play together again sooner rather than later. It's always a blast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And with that, so long, Shire folk.
You can say it too if you want. So long, Shire folk.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.